A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, and the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Got to say, I'm a little discombobulated just before I sat down to record today's program. I saw the news about former Virginia Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax murdering his wife, taking his own life in their home and Fairfax County, Virginia, last night, while their two kids apparently were in the home. I'm just appalled and shocked and disgusted by this, and my heart goes out to those kids. Fairfax, you know, was a staunch gun control advocate. He was praised by the gun control group Giffords, among others, when he was elected lieutenant governor in 2017. I ran across a segment from a WAVY-TV at the 2020 Virginia Citizen Defense League Lobby Day in Richmond. That was the year where, you know, 50, 60,000 gun owners turned out. And a reporter was there, and he caught Fairfax engaging with some gun owners. And, you know, so he went over to the lieutenant governor and asked, okay, well, what's your point here? And Fairfax said, well, you know, the point I'm trying to make, and I'm paraphrasing, is basically, you know, we don't have to yell and scream at each other. We can listen to each other. We can be civil to each other. And I wish that Justin Fairfax had been able to do that in his personal life not just when the cameras were rolling. If you're the praying kind, say a prayer for those kids, because there's some dark days ahead for them. I'm heartbroken for those two kids today. On today's program, we're going to talk about what's going on a little to the east of Fairfax County, Virginia. In Washington, D.C., specifically regarding the Supreme Court. Ran across this post from National Association for Gun Rights, Hannah Hill, earlier today. So Trump, she says, is actively putting pressure on Justice Thomas and Justice Alito to retire. There's no other way to read these comments, and she links to a CNN story. And the quote that she had highlighted, Trump said he has a list of potential candidates in mind if a seat opens up on the 9-justice bench this year. And when asked about the importance of the possibility of Alito stepping down while Republicans are in control of the Senate, Trump pointed to how Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death in 2020 shifted the court. Telling Fox Business Maria Bartiromo in an interview that aired on Wednesday, Ginsburg could not do it, and she really hurt herself within the Democrat Party. People are very angry at her because I got to appoint people instead of Biden. So I went and I looked at the rest of the CNN story, because that certainly does, you know, seem to indicate that that this is very much on Trump's mind, right? And yes, I would say putting a little bit of pressure on Justice Alito, but also on Justice Thomas. So the CNN interview goes, or the CNN report goes on to say that Trump said he didn't know whether Alito or Justice Clarence Thomas would actually step down, as the CNN story notes. Supreme Court justices are appointed for life. Their decisions about retirement are often personal and shrouded in secrecy. Neither justice has indicated their plans. Sam Alito did not respond to a request for comment. CNN says that the 76-year-old Alito is the second oldest justice on the court, next to Clarence Thomas, who's 77, another reliable conservative, as CNN reports. And the network says there's been speculation for months over whether Alito will retire in time for Trump to appoint a replacement, and for a Republican Senate to confirm a new justice to guarantee the seat is not blocked by Democrats and filled by a potential Democratic president in 2029. You know, so we look at the map in November, and right now, you know, Democrats, I think, have a very good chance of taking back the House, just based on historic trends for the party that's out of power in the midterms, not to mention the, you know, redistricting efforts that are underway in states like Virginia, that are designed to countermand the redistricting efforts, you know, in Texas and other states like that. But, you know, California, Virginia, the map is tilting in those states to try to give Democrats an advantage, just as it is in states like Texas and Florida to try to give Republicans an advantage. But again, traditionally, the party that's out of power generally sees some gains in the House in the midterm elections. Senate is a little bit different story, because the map doesn't really favor Democrats all that much. Although it has to be said that there are some polls out there showing that at least a couple of seats that are currently held by Republicans could flip this November. North Carolina, Tom Tillis is not running for re-election. Democrat Roy Cooper, who's the former governor of North Carolina. Solid name recognition. He was a fairly popular governor. And right now the polls have him up, I think, anywhere from like 4 to 6 points over the Republican, likely Republican nominee. I'm not convinced that Texas is winnable for Democrats, but James Tallarico is probably going to be a tougher candidate than Jasmine Crockett would have been for whoever wins the Republican primary, be it Ken Paxton or John Cornyn. Ken Paxton, I know, has a better reputation among Second Amendment advocates, but he also has a lot of baggage that is going to be subject to, you know, a lot of campaign attack ads if he gets the nomination. So, you know, it is going to be a tough fight, I think, for Republicans to keep control of the Senate. And if you are a gun owner, you need to get registered to vote no matter where you live. You need to vote in this November's elections and vote like your rights depend on it, because they absolutely do. But it is not out of the realm of possibility that Democrats take control of both chambers of Congress. And if Democrats are in control of the Senate starting in January, then yes, it is going to be impossible for Donald Trump to nominate an Alito or Thomas-esque a jurist to serve. I mean, he can nominate him, but it's going to be impossible for them to get confirmed by a Democrat-controlled Senate. They, Democrat-controlled Senate, might not approve anybody. Might just keep those seats open until 2028. Or early 2029, in their hopes that a Democrat could fill those seats. So even if Alito or Thomas were to retire, or God forbid, were to pass away between you know, now and then, if the Democrats are in control of the Senate, you're not going to get another Alito. You're not going to get another Thomas. At the same time, there really doesn't seem to be any signals from either of those justices that they're planning on moving on. From what I can tell, they have hired clerks for the upcoming term. They're doing all of the things that a justice does in preparation for the upcoming term, right? I know Sam Alito does have a book coming out, and there was some speculation about, well, you know, maybe that's a sign that he's stepping down. I don't think so. I mean, Amy Coney Barrett released a book this year, and she's obviously still there on the bench. I understand, and I mean, quite honestly, from a purely political, pragmatic perspective, yeah, it absolutely makes sense for Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas to retire and allow President Trump to pick their replacements. It just does. But I don't know that politics, pragmatic politics, really plays into the thinking when you're on the Supreme Court. I mean, as we saw with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? I mean, it doesn't matter if you're appointed by a Republican. It doesn't matter if you consider yourself to be a conservative. I suspect that when you're on the Supreme Court, you think rightly or wrongly that position is sort of elevated above the day-to-day political machinations. I don't happen to think that's the case, but I suspect that, again, that is true for a lot of the justices. I think that was why Ruth Bader Ginsburg stuck around, despite Democrats telling her, I'm sorry, I should have turned my phone off before I started recording here. Anyway, despite the Democrats, you know, urging her to step down, she stayed put. And I think that that was why. Now, assuming that Justice Alito and or Justice Thomas do decide, hey, you know what? Retirement looks pretty good. Justice Thomas, I know, likes to cruise around the country in an RV. Maybe he wants to do that full time. Who would be likely replacements? And who would you like to see as replacements for one or both of those justices? I have a pretty short list. Jeanine Pirro is not on it, by the way. No. God, no. Nor do I want to see Judge Judy appointed, or really any other television judge. Maybe if Judge Wapner were around, but he's not. My short list is really two individuals. If there are two openings, I would love to see Lawrence Van Dyke from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals be nominated by President Trump. Yes, because Judge Van Dyke has been extraordinarily good on Second Amendment issues in the Ninth Circuit, but not just in terms of what his rulings have been. It's also how he has gone about his rulings. I know he's rubbed a lot of colleagues the wrong way because he's called out the shenanigans that the Ninth Circuit plays, particularly with Second Amendment cases. And by the way, that continues. The Ninth Circuit granted cert, granted an en banc petition in Baird versus Bonta. That's the challenge to California's ban on open carry in basically non-rural counties. And even in rural counties, you have to get permission from the county sheriff. This is an odd case. It was a three-judge panel decision that again struck down the ban on open carry in urban areas. But it kind of held that the provisions for rural counties are akin to a shall issue licensing system. Amy Bellantoni, who's actually the attorney for Mr. Baird, asked for an en banc review as well, which is really odd. I haven't had a chance to talk with Amy about it, but I'd love to get her on the program to talk about her thinking, given that it was mostly a win for her client. But both California Attorney General Rob Bonta and the plaintiff's attorney, Amy Bellantoni, sought that en banc review, which was granted yesterday. So that good decision is going to be on hold. It's probably going to be overturned by an en banc panel. Now, we don't know. The Ninth Circuit is so large that not every judge in that circuit gets to participate in the in an en banc process, right? It's basically a random draw. I think 11 of the 27 judges will participate. So there's an opportunity for a good decision en banc. But the odds of that panel being pro-Second Amendment, less than 50-50, right? But Judge Van Dyke has been, again, extraordinary on the Ninth Circuit. He is the judge, you remember, who actually had a video dissent where he talked about, and I think this was in, it might have been in Duncan versus Bonta. I can't remember because there have been so many cases out of California. It's such a target-rich environment for Second Amendment advocates who are litigating. But I think it was Duncan versus Bonta because I think that was where he talked about a magazine being a central component of a firearm. Whereas other Ninth Circuit judges concluded that magazines were not arms under the Second Amendment and therefore were not protected under the Second Amendment. And Judge Van Dyke's point was, okay, if you're going to treat magazines that way, well, what about some of these other components here? Like, can you remove, there's nothing that says a trigger, right? It's a frame or receiver under federal law. That's the firearm. Nothing about triggers. So can you remove the trigger and it's still a gun? And he actually disassembled a pistol to show the various component parts, how they all work together and how, you know, yes, these component parts are central to the function of an arm and therefore are protected by the Second Amendment because of their essential nature to an arm being more than a paperweight, right? So I'd love to see Judge Van Dyke become Justice Van Dyke. I think that would be extraordinary. And I think it would be extremely helpful for gun owners in the decades to come. My second choice would be Fifth Circuit Judge Don Willett, who was formerly on the Texas Supreme Court. You may have followed Judge Willett on social media. He used to have a great Twitter account before he was named to the federal bench, and then he kind of mostly shut that down. I think, you know, every few months he'll post something on Twitter about family or, you know, something very non-political. But Judge Willett has a very great, sharp legal mind. He, too, has been really good on Second Amendment cases. He has questioned the constitutionality of the framework of the National Firearms Act. He is very much an originalist when it comes to the Constitution, very much a believer in limited government, very much, I think, a judge who understands the fundamental nature of the right to keep and bear arms. I'm sure that there are other good candidates out there. And again, I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments, because I'm sure you've got some names that I haven't even considered. But if President Trump gets to pick two more justices, those would be by far the two that I would have in mind. If I had to choose between one or the other, I mean, if we only had one retirement, I think I'd have to go with, you know, and I honestly, I'd probably the tiebreaker would be the age of either Justice Van Dyke Judge Van Dyke or Judge Willett. Whoever would be younger, I think would probably be my choice. If that wasn't the consideration, I'd probably lean towards Judge Van Dyke, just because of the, this isn't quite the right word I want to use, but the showmanship, I guess, the way that Judge Van Dyke has been able to get his point across. I like his style very much, and I would love to see that on the Supreme Court. Again, it's not up to me, and it's not up to President Trump even. It's up to Justice Alito and Justice Thomas as to whether or not they are ready to ride off into the sunset. And again, right now, there's no indication that that is going to be the case. But we shall see. Again, with a lot of Second Amendment cases either already percolating into the Supreme Court or coming up in the next term or two, it is hugely important that we have as strong a Second Amendment majority as possible. And if you lose both of those justices, you lose the majority. You know, a 6-3 decision becomes a 4-5 decision. A 5-4 decision becomes a 3-6 decision, upholding gun control laws. And that would be an outright disaster for our right to keep and bear arms. So let's hope and keep our fingers crossed that that doesn't happen in the near future. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Houston, Texas. Houston man gets deferred probation after he shot a man in the face during a child custody exchange. How does somebody get nothing more than probation, not just after, you know, firing shots, but actually hitting somebody in the face? 24-year-old Tyler Deshaun Goudreau Cheeks pleaded guilty to two counts of aggravated assault back in October. He was back in the 54th State District Court in Waco, Texas, on Wednesday for sentencing. Prosecutors had recommended in October that Judge Susan Kelly place Cheeks on deferred probation for 8 years in exchange for his guilty plea. The judge said yesterday that she struggled with that plea offer. And she actually asked the prosecutor, Dan Stokes, why should I go along with this? Stokes said the child's mother wants Cheeks to take the matter seriously and for him to, quote, step up and meet his obligations as a father, including making child support payments for which he is in arrears. So in other words, he goes to prison and she doesn't get paid child support, Your Honor. And so, you know, she's going to be worse off. The child's going to be worse off. There's no guarantee that this guy's actually going to step up, though, right? That's the problem. But the judge did go along with it. The prosecutor also said he hasn't heard from the second victim in the case. The prosecutor said that the woman does want Cheeks monitored to make sure he complies with the law and the terms of his conditions of probation. Well, it's great she can want that, but how many stories have we had in the past where people have violated the terms of their probation, and what's happened? They've been placed on more probation. Right? So, I mean, yeah, you can want that. Doesn't mean you're going to get it. But the judge did place Cheeks on deferred probation, which means, by the way, if he stays out of trouble, he'll have this felony wiped off the books in 8 years. That's just amazing to me. He was fined $500 order to perform 300 hours of community service and to take a family violence course. The judge did ask Cheeks if he's making child support payments, how much he's paying. He didn't know how much he was supposed to be paying, but his attorney said that he is set to start a new job today in Houston and is in the process of catching up on back child support. The judge said, you need to familiarize yourself with the court order, take care of your obligations. I don't want to be a family law court right now, but you need to step up. Yeah. Okay. Well, again, two felonies, 8 years probation. And that's in the Lone Star State. So again, these types of sentences can happen anywhere and everywhere. This is an issue that is endemic in the criminal justice system. It's not confined to blue states or blue cities. Now, our hero of the day, our self-defense story of the day, an unusual one, also from the Lone Star State. Here's the headline. A woman shot by stalker car saves her life in North Harris County, according to a Harris County Sheriff's Office. Now, actually, it wasn't a car that saved her life. It was her boyfriend who saved this woman's life. He just happened to be behind the wheel of a car. And yes, while we normally talk about people using firearms in self-defense, in this case, it was a vehicle that was the self-defense tool, or actually the defense of others tool. This happened Tuesday night in Harris County, in the Houston area, about 9:30 in the evening. A woman and her boyfriend were coming home from church. They were driving separate cars. She gets there first, pulls into the garage, and as the boyfriend's pulling up behind her, he's in the driveway, he hears gunshots from inside the garage, and he sees his girlfriend being chased by a guy who's dressed all in black. The suspect fired a shot near the boyfriend's car, according to deputies, and the boyfriend then drove his car into the suspect, breaking his leg. The woman was shot. Thankfully, at last report, it looks like she suffered non-life-threatening injuries. And as it turns out, the woman actually knew this guy, or at least was aware of this guy. He's been identified as a 24-year-old Emmanuel Marin, who was a member of this church. He had been asked not to return to the church, though, after making threats to staff. And I guess he had been stalking this woman. I don't know if she had taken out an order of protection against him, but there were, you know, there was previous involvement here. Right now, Marin has been charged with burglary as well as aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. The investigation is ongoing, and my guess is that if the victim in this case and her boyfriend were not gun owners before, they are soon going to be gun owners, because I'm glad in this case that a vehicle was enough to stop this guy, but it's hard to carry a pickup truck in your pocket or in a holster. So if this individual gets out, which very well may be the case, still poses a threat, don't depend on your four-wheel drive being able to save your life, or 911 at that point, you know, or an order of protection for that matter. Be sure that you've got the tools necessary to protect yourself and your loved ones. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. In New Jersey, a neighbor saved a woman from a burning home in Toms River. Both ended up injured, but thankfully it looks like the injuries are not too serious. Toms River, by the way, I believe the concealed carry capital of New Jersey. Per capita, the most concealed carry permits that have been issued since the Bruin decision. I saw that from the Asbury Park Press last week. And the Asbury Park Press reporting on this incident, it was, I guess, Tuesday morning, about 10:50 in the morning, in a community of mobile homes. One woman's home did catch fire, but her neighbor ran into the burning building and was able to pull her to safety. Not without suffering some burns himself, unfortunately. The woman was taken to the Thomas Jefferson University Burn Center in Philadelphia. Last report, she was listed as stable, which is, that's a good sign. The Good Samaritan, his name has not been released. He went to a community medical center there in Toms River, and thankfully was treated and released. So it sounds like, again, he was not seriously injured. Firefighter actually suffered minor injuries as well while trying to put out the blaze. He, too, was treated and released. they've traced the origin of the fire to a particular spot in the home, but they haven't been able to say conclusively what sparked the blaze. The Ocean County prosecutor said in a statement, though, that the quote, failure of lithium ion batteries could not be eliminated as a cause. So looks like that is what they suspect was behind the fire. But again, this unnamed Good Samaritan in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, at risk to himself, running into that burning home to save the woman inside. We thank you for your very, very good deed. And I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I so appreciate you being here. I hope that you have a great rest of your week and a good weekend. We'll be back with you maybe on Monday. I'm not quite sure. I might be taking Monday off. Still kind of up in the air. If I'm not here on Monday, I'll be back with you on Tuesday. And I may, even if I take the day off from writing, I may end up doing a Cam and Company, because we do have a Supreme Court conference this Friday. So we'll have orders coming out on Monday. Fingers crossed we get some good news and maybe a cert grant. But either way, I will see you back here in the next couple of days. And in the meantime, be sure to check out BearingArms.com. We are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. If you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can take 60% off your membership no matter what tier of support you choose. And no matter what tier you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. And again, I want to thank you for that very much. All right, we'll see you soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.